each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
This is the Winds of Change Pledge Drive. Help us stay on the air by making your donation now to ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And click on the radio tab to donate securely. Your contribution to Winds of Change will be a blessing. Thank you.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for being here. And I add my thoughts to the prayers and please help us keep Winds of Change on the air. It's a great hour.
These guys, again.
It's a great hour and provides us with some brain wrinkling.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That's an anticipation.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to wrinkle your brain.
Right.
And you need to tune in. You know what I was realizing, too, is just a list of websites, a list of sources, resources, mm-hmm. is so key to have, you know?
Yep.
There's so much out there. I sometimes look at my room, and unfortunately, it's getting messier. I have to find space for more books.
It's the way it always goes.
It goes on a table, and you know. And God bless the people. I love them dearly. I might get two or three books a week, you know. And mm-hmm. It goes on a table, and here we are. We're on another Wednesday, and we're going to wrinkle your brains a bit. Last week, Tony, do you remember I opened a can of worms somewhat?
Yeah.
Most people who listen to The Wind of Change.
Isn't that what you do most of the time?
I just got to.
It's what we love about you.
And especially reflecting on history. Mm-hmm. Reflecting on history.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger. No, Will Robinson. Danger.
There is it. You might say, why is it danger to reflect on history?
I guess it's the warning.
It's the warning.
He's warning.
Yeah, and there's a danger of reflecting on history, and there's a danger of forgetting history. It's danger all around.
Exactly.
You know, there's no safe trail or what have you. Anyways, I wanted to get into some of the figures of the Reformation. Mm-hmm. This is the year 2018, which is, well, now it's 501 year. 2017 was the 500th anniversary of the so-called Protestant Reformation. And I spent a lot of time last week just trying to defend the idea that it's good to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Because it is a risky when you go back in, and remember, it leads me to I'm going to just call it my Coisean virtue, just because I haven't read it anywhere. Mm. It's a new, well, it's not that, it's not really that new, but my terminology might be new, but that is holy forgetfulness,
mm-hmm.
holy forgetfulness, because there's different kinds of forgetfulness, and there's certainly unholy forgetfulness. But I think a good historian goes back in history. We learn lessons, and we don't use the bad that others have done in the past to beat people today. Yeah. And so there's a kind of holy forgetfulness that we need to have. But an unholy forgetfulness comes when you don't even care, right. You know. So, oh gosh, well, we're going to get into some of the stories of some of the main characters to introduce. There's this little play that's taken over the country these days, and there's a little song. I kind of like, this is how it goes. It goes something like this.
Two guys who tells your story.
Every other founding father story gets told. Every other founding father gets to grow old.
And when you're gone, who remembers your name? Who keeps your flame? Who tells your story?
Who tells your story?
Who tells your story?
When the elk will see that.
It's an interesting, that's from Hamilton, of course.
Right.
And it's got a lot, there's some crude stuff in, so I wouldn't take young children to it. Mm. But it's, I'm glad that young people are trying to get interested in history. The play itself, this is a topic for another hour, because I just wanted to use it as a springboard to get to the mm-hmm. Reformation. But I'll at least say this, that the dominating theme is a lot of it has to do with the romance stories.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, for a lot of people, that is a dominant theme in your life. You know, you can't get away from it. But when you go back to telling the story of the founding of United States, and Hamilton was primarily noted for his establishing the treasury. Wait a minute, I got it. Here's a couple of the lines. Who lives, who dies, tells your story. The song that I just played mm-hmm. a little clip from, it starts like this. Let me tell you what I wished I'd known when I was young and dreamed of glory. You have no control who lives, who dies, who tells your story. Now, let's stop there for a second. I don't know what that conjures up in your mind, but that certainly is the way people... Oh, yeah.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Already.
There is a wrinkle. I noticed in just the way we were going to approach this story is from a philosophical angle of determinism.
Mm-hmm.
Determinism, like your actions don't really have that much of an effect. And we do feel that way at times. You know, we certainly do feel that way. So when drawn into these thought-provoking plays, you know, and there's a difference between thought-provoking plays and thought-provoking movies versus just fun plays and fun movies.
Mm-hmm.
Good example, Grease. I would say is more of a fun play.
Right.
You know, I suppose it could make you
think. I don't know. I think about that when I know. It is a fun play, yes.
It's a fun play, you know.
Compared to Hamilton.
Exactly. And when you think about Grease Lightning... Mm-hmm. You know, go Grease Lightning, and you
go Grease Lightning.
You gotta think of the ramifications of having a fast car versus not having a fast car.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so anyways, but as you get into the thought provoking movies and plays and stories and everything, you have to analyze the philosophies and so Hamilton is kind of starting from that deterministic mm-hmm. outlook. You have no control who lives, who dies, who tells your story. But then you listen to the whole story, and it's all about how Hamilton and Washington and Jefferson and all these, and Burr, Aaron Burr, did determine or mm-hmm. did lots of things to determine who lives, who dies, and who tells the story. So, I can't resist. Before we get to our characters from mm-hmm. The 16th century, we're in the 18th century now with the founding of the United States. Because one of the lines that I want to ring a bell and say, stop the show. We got to discuss this a little bit because Alexander Hamilton says, President Jefferson, I'll give him this. His financial system was a work of genius. I couldn't undo it if I tried. And I tried. So that's alluding to the historical fact that Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton had different views of finances. But to say that Thomas Jefferson had a financial system that Alexander Hamilton would have called genius, let me put in the context. Let me just share a little bit. Are you up on the financial systems of both Jefferson and Hamilton, Tony? Do you need a little help?
I need a lot of help.
just a little help on the differences.
Right.
Thomas Jefferson was very much against, like, a big nation.
Okay. I didn't remember this.
He was against big government.
Right.
And when you hear the word federalism, that in that time represented too much central power by a federal government, not enough power, not enough authority in the hands of the smaller powers, namely the states. Mm-hmm. And so, and Thomas Jefferson was a farmer. He was an inventor, of course. He was a reader. He was a lawyer. He was a teacher. But he probably was most proud of the fact that he was a farmer. And he thought that this country was based on farming, that it was a good thing that it was based on farming, and it should stay so and remain so. And you can't argue with them in some ways. Mm-hmm. Can't have country without food. Who grows the food? It's the farmers. And so he loathed the idea of federal banks, for instance. Federal banks.
I like this guy already.
Yeah. but then you wouldn't like Alexander Hamilton, because Alexander Hamilton's the new hero.
Yeah.
Not because of what he's known for, I think, in the history books, but because of this play. Right. And because he's the marginalized victim who gets shot in the end. He's a good example of somewhat of a being made a political martyr. Because he does get shot by Alan Burr, who was the vice president at the time under Thomas Jefferson. But Alexander Hamilton thought, no, we got to get out of debt first, and we got to pay our debts. And who do you owe? You owed some people in the colonies. You owed some people who were of the United States, the new United States, but also owed France and the Netherlands, Dutch. They also owed people in other countries. So he would say, well, we got to put all our resources together so we can pay some of these debts. So Alexander Hamilton was pushing for a sense of, the National Bank, and a sense of a nation. And in this, I do side with Alexander Hamilton a little bit, because If Hamilton and John Adams, by way of bringing in another one who has not been on his side, the United States of America as a nation wouldn't have developed as much. The United States, period, or the states united, would have been what we would have tried. Very similar to the states of Europe, you know. And when I say the phrase states of Europe, for many of our listeners, you might say, well, what do you mean? What are the states of Europe? Like when we say states of the United States, we think of Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, that. But when you say the states of Europe, you're talking France, Italy, Spain, the Netherlands, and all. In other words, nations were the states. Mm-hmm. And so if it wasn't for Alexander Hamilton and John Adams and their crowd, the Federalist Papers, they were the ones who, James Madison too, they called them the Federalist Papers because they were trying to make a plug for a federal. Why have a federal government? And so Thomas Jefferson kind of was fighting against that.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have then developed into another Europe. We wouldn't have developed into the United States of America. We would have developed into many different states like Europe and perhaps not become the nation that we're... Also, Thomas Jefferson was very much in favor of each state having its sovereignty could make its own money.
Ooh.
You know, so that then you'd have to have currency exchanges at every at every toll booth.
Four states. You
know? Okay, we're in Indiana now. We got to trade in
different
my
money.
Illinois money for Indiana money, and
yeah.
You could see how that would, you know. And then Thomas Jefferson's anti-banking thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
He would have actually given banks a tremendous boost in business. You know, if you had to do currency for every different state, that's a lot of business for a banker. You know, obviously, you know, so it's a complicated mess. It's a complicated mess. Speaking of complicated, but it's not a mess. We're going to do a little quick break here. So glad to be with you, everyone. I'm Father Tom Coyce. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Thank you for spending your lunch hour with us. At Winds of Change, we talk to you about your faith and your life to bring you closer to Christ. And now we ask you to help us during the Winds of Change pledge drive. Please donate whatever you are able to help keep us on the air by going to stans.org. Stans spelled STANS. That's stans.org. And click on the radio tab to donate securely right now. We at Winds of Change thank you for your generosity.
The Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change.
On AM 750 WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Sometimes in life, we are confronted with the tyranny of choice. I know, stop or go, hot or cold, up or down, this way or that way. You can contribute to Winds of Change one way or the other. One way is to go to windsofchangeshow.com. Then click on Support Winds of Change Show in the upper right-hand corner of the page. The other is to go to ststanschurch.org and click on the radio tab to make your donation, one way or the other.
Hey, Father Coyce here. Just to add, I really want to mention that to all of our listeners. To support Winds of Change, do go to ststanschurch.org. And click the radio tab to donate whatever you can. It'll give us a good sense of the Lord's will. God's will be done. And I do pray that you appreciate this little radio hour. Like I say, who lives, who dies, who tells your story?
Mm-hmm.
I want to tell some of the stories that have died or faded away. I never even knew some of this, though I knew many of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to go back to this beginning of the Church of England. Hilaire Belloc, a Catholic author who was good friends of C.S. Lewis and Tolkien, you know, the guy who wrote Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
He was living in England. And this was in the early 1900s, so 100 years ago, but still 300 years after the Protestant Reformation, or 1916, yeah, 350. You can push it to 400 if you go back far. Anyways, be that as it may, I don't always have Mr.
Peabody. A long time ago.
Yeah, a long time ago in a galaxy far away. So, the idea of King, he named some of the principal characters, which I want to just try to get to here. The two that are most prominent in my mind are two that he says are very important, but not the most important. What he says the most important figure in the downfall of the Catholic Church in England. And he then opines, and I think he's on good grounds, by saying if England hadn't concretized the Reformation that started in Germany, but England concretized the Reformation in this regard. It made it a federal case, or they wouldn't use the word federal. It made it a kingly case. It made it a realm. It made it a, we say today, remember when we were kids, you don't have to make a federal case out of it, you know? But that you meant, you know, it's a small thing. Don't make too big of a deal out of it, you know? So, but before there were federal governments, you just had kings. So don't make a royal, don't be a royal pain in the butt ski.
Right.
That's another way of saying it. You know, you could be a little pain, but not a royal pain.
Right.
These are various ways. Belloc wants us to concentrate on the mastermind behind that Reformation, which tied the Reformation to the national government, if you could call it that, at the time of a king. And that was a domino effect for the other countries. And he opines, and I never thought of it this way, but had England not codified Protestantism or hitched the theological rebellion or the spiritual religious battles, if England hadn't hitched that to its political machinery, then the call for reform just might have happened. And we could have gotten through that bump or that radical cry for reform, fix the corruption in the church, because there were certainly many in the Catholic Church that wanted it reformed, but it was very, very difficult. So Hilaire Belloc is pointing out that we got to look closely at these characters. Okay, now I gotta play this little clip too, because remember I was saying we're going back into history, we're gonna uncover some nasty things, and we thought, why? Remember why? And here's the reason why: holy forgetfulness.
Exactly.
We need to practice holy forgetfulness. But in order to practice holy forgetfulness, first you got to know what you're forgetting, or you're setting it aside in a noble way. I know you called me a jerk, but I'm going to forgive you.
For now.
For now, yeah. Okay, well, we're not quite there yet.
Right.
But when you do say, I'm going to forget about it, I'm going to forgive you, as if it didn't happen.
Okay.
That's kind of holy forgetfulness. And we're all called on to do that with our close relationships. And in a big way, as a national religious people, whatever, you know, we may have to have some more. Now, and no sooner, I was like, okay, what's an example of unholy forgetfulness? And one hit me upside the head.
This is how it goes.
Yeah, you may know this. Here's an example of unholy forgetfulness, okay? And we'll analyze it here. It goes like this.
For the first time in history, the Pope opens his doors to address the questions and issues we face together as a leader whose faith inspires the world.
I have the distinct honor of presenting to you Pope Francis of the Holy See.
Buonasera.
That's from the trailer. There's a new movie coming out about Pope Francis. Can you guess, Tony, where I'm going to go with this? Because I would want to see it, and I want Pope Francis to do well, and I love the guy in a lot of ways. Do you see a sliver of one? There's an an example.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
See, that's why I can't speak right now, because my brain is wrinkled.
Too much wrinkles. It's from that very beginning. Okay, let's see. We're gonna
this one more time.
Okay. Let's see if I can give it to you one more time here. Let's see this.
For the first time in history, the Pope opens his doors to.
First time in history.
When I heard that, I almost fell off my chair. They're going to start a movie, trying to get people to come to see a movie about Pope Francis by telling people that this is the first Pope in history that's opening his doors to try to address the issues of the day.
Unholy forgiveness, or forget.
That is the perfect example of unholy forgetfulness. What part of human history did the producers of this movie sleep through? Saying, the whole history of the church from Peter until Pope Francis is a constant story of the Pope trying to dialogue with various...
But we don't talk or think about that, because it's only now, it's here, and this is the only Pope.
Yeah. It seems so obvious that the ones who would come up with that phrase are saying, well, I've disagreed with all the ways that the Pope has settled disputes in the past 2,000 years, but now finally we're going to have a Pope that's going to settle our disputes correctly. And that's problematic from the get-go. I'm sure I'll get to see the movie, and I'm sure we'll have some interesting things to...
Talk about.
But I couldn't help but use that little phraseology, right? For the first time in history, the Pope is opening his doors to discuss the issues of the day. Okay, let me get back in my chair, because I fell out of my chair again with it.
I'm trying to get back up in too.
So yeah, that's what we're at. Okay, so that's one of the reasons, the reason I call that an example of unholy forgetfulness is that they seem to have forgotten so many of the debates that have punctuated Catholic history. It's a typical mistake of Protestant Christians to not see Christianity as a 2,000-year enterprise.
Kind of like retelling a story but leaving important things out.
Yeah.
Making it a now, because it suits whatever I'm trying to persuade you to.
Indeed. And if you're going to try to find out what's popular now, mm-hmm. or what do you think the majority of the people are thinking, and that will be a certain position you gravitate toward. But I'll even make another analogy. It's kind of like teenagers who argue with their moms and dads, and who doesn't, you know? And it's good for, I encourage some teenagers not to argue, but to discuss with their with their moms and dads. They should try to discuss and try to develop a mature way of discussing. Because part of the problem, an immature way of discussing a problem is, I hate your guts and I'll never want to talk to you again. That's sort of a position that somebody will take, but it's not a very mature position, you know, or you're ugly, or you're old-fashioned, or you don't know what you're talking about. Those kind of ways are not at all helpful in a discussion regarding. But the teenager doesn't know the past. For a teenager, time begins with himself or herself. And for the mom and dad, no, time doesn't start with you. We're older. Parents could think that the time only starts with them. Same problem, but at least it's a little better than with the teenager who's only 15, whatever. And I'm saying that a typical problem of many Protestant men, people who are wonderful, good people, and I cherish them, they can have such great fire and love for Jesus, But one of the typical problems is that the history is not seen as 2,000 years. That's why I was so shocked. A movie about the Pope, who's a Catholic figure, you know, somebody thinks that history is starting, you know, with Pope Francis or the first time in history. That's just not right. It's not it's not the first time in history. Go and look. Every moment in history has a lot of that. You know, so
what do you say? Don't cloud the argument with truth. It's not what we want to hear. Now. It's what I want to tell you.
Exactly. So don't dissuade me with facts or anything.
Right.
Sort. Yeah. Okay. So here we are. Back to the founding of the Church of England. So I've always had this understanding that King Henry VIII started the Church of England and was the mastermind behind the Church of England. Certainly he was. He was an obnoxious ego. He certainly had a weakness for the ladies. Mm-hmm. And that is part of the story. Because he was married to Catherine of Aragon, who was from Spain. And it was a kind of a, when Spain and England were pretty tight, as it were. And that was, obviously, everybody knows that that's how politics happened back in the days of monarchies. He's the one who declares himself the supreme head of the church, really ticking off the Pope. Pope said, wait a minute. I got that job description. You can have that job description. That's my title. You can't take that title. And I got it from Jesus. And
But I'm the king. I can do what I want.
So I can give it to myself. Mm-hmm. But Hilaire Belloc makes the point, and I think, again, he's right, that idea of declaring the king head of the Church of England came from his underlings, as it were. And King Henry VIII, he only wanted to declare himself supreme head of the church for one reason, to give himself an annulment.
Here we go.
And because he wanted to get Catherine of Aragon, mm-hmm, out, and he wanted to marry Anne Boleyn. And so he didn't even want to destroy marriage as a sacrament. He liked the sacraments. As a matter of fact, Henry VIII liked the old mass. He liked the mass. And he also liked the fact that priests took a vow of celibacy. He thought this was good for the church, good for the country, blah, blah, blah. He did strike the fire, but it may have dwindled out had not other people jumped on the bandwagon. And Belloc explained something about property and money that makes a lot of sense. So we're going to have to come back to that. We're gonna jump back in and get to this character, William Cecil, who's the mastermind. Who's behind that curtain, little Dorothy? Anyways, I'm Father Tom Coyes. I'm sitting in for Father Anthony Borsch. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
This is The Winds of Change Pledge Drive. Help us stay on the air by making your donation now to ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And click on the radio tab to donate securely. Your contribution to Winds of Change will be a blessing. Thank you.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Floors as low.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
You've got your radio turned on to Winds of Change, where you can hear about your faith and hear about today's culture through the lens of Christ's teachings with Father Anthony Bush and others. Monday through Friday at noon on AM 750. keep Winds of Change on by going to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to donate. And Winds of Change offers thanks for your donation.
Hey, my friends, and to donate to Winds of Change, please do go to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to donate. I really appreciate it. It's a great great little radio hour we have here, and let's do our best to keep it going. $10 here, $25 here, $100 here, $1,000 there.
So that's a good goal. We're just going for a dollar. If we could do a dollar.
A dollar, yeah, come on.
A pledge.
A dollar a show.
Think about it.
I'd pay a dollar a show for this, you know.
Yep.
It's the way. Okay, so here we are. I've discovered the fact that some people think that Pope Francis is the first pope in history to have ever tried to discuss matters with the church and the people.
I thought that was true. There's a movie coming out about that.
Yeah, yeah. It's called Pope Francis, A Man of His Word, and I hope it helps. I do hope it helps, but I'm a little cautious just by that trailer. It seems to be a non-Catholic kind of twist to it right off the bat. Okay, so we got King Henry VIII mm-hmm. in the beginning of the Church of England. Then we got Queen Elizabeth, who was just to put your players in. And you can't tell your players without a scorecard, you know. and when I get into this part of history, I got to build it up a little bit here. Queen Elizabeth, who is sometimes referred to as the Virgin Queen, which she, all historians would quickly tell you, she was no virgin, but she didn't get married.
Right.
She couldn't find a suitable husband, and I'm not going to judge her on that. Maybe the guys that were trying to become her husband were losers. Okay, so be that as may.
But put it out there.
But she certainly didn't. I don't think she was a virgin. But anyways, she was the rival of first there was the Queen Catherine. Mm-hmm. Queen Catherine, the daughter of the emperor. So she was king of Spain also. She marries Henry VIII. They love each other, and they seem, by all standards, starting off good. And Henry loved her, and she loved Henry. But the fact that she wasn't having any boys got Henry mad. They did have a little girl. Mm-hmm. And one of the ironies and contradictions of history is the fact that people forget. Here's unholy forgetfulness, Holy forgetfulness. So we got to practice holy forgetfulness. I'm going to tell you the story, and you could not use it as a club to pound over people's heads, but know it. It makes your not holding it over people's heads more virtuous. I could hit you over the head with this, but I'm not going to. And that is that history and the narrative is so often told that Henry VIII had to get rid of Catherine of Aragon because he needed a boy heir to the throne. He knew that England needed a king. And so in order for him to get his annulment, it was the church should have given an annulment to prevent a civil war. Because everybody knows when the leader is up in the air, who's going to be the next leader.
Just wrinkled my brain, man.
Did I wrinkle your brain, Nick, there? Okay, good, good.
Nick's just blown away.
I can go home now. I feel successful.
My job has been complete.
My job is done. So, okay, there's Henry VIII, and he's the way the history is told mm-hmm. is that he had to divorce Catherine primarily because he needed an heir to the throne. He needed a king. Well, darn it, he had a daughter. a perfectly wonderful, nobody disputed the fact that Mary was his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could, the historians would say, well, England wanted a king. They wouldn't have accepted a woman daughter. I think, wait a minute. Catherine of Aragon was the daughter of Isabella of Spain. And Isabella was queen of Spain. And for many years, she was the, even when Ferdinand, her husband, the king, was around, she ran Spain. Remember, she was the one who gave money to Christopher Columbus and all that
right.
jazz. She was very popular. People accepted Queen Elizabeth, Queen Isabella.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the way history is told is hogwash, fake news, that Henry VIII had to divorce Catherine of Aragon because he needed an heir to the throne. He had an heir to the throne. He just didn't want his girl. He wanted a boy. And even more than wanting a boy, he wanted Anne Boleyn, who struck his fancy. And when you read about these in history, you find out Anne Boleyn was of a family. Henry VIII already was having a relationship with Anne Boleyn's older sister.
Oh, what a dog.
She was his mistress, but he got tired of her pretty quick. And the younger sister, Anne, figures, I'm going to play the game differently. I'm not going to let him have me in the romantic way, mm-hmm. in the fullness of being had. I'm going to play hard to get. And so she does. And it works.
Wow.
It works marvelously. So eventually, we all know, well, most of us know the story that King Henry VIII does. He doesn't get his annulment from the Pope at the time, Clement VII. And I think that's what it is. He's pretty mad. So it's William Cecil that says, declare yourself head of the church, will back you up, and you can give yourself your own annulment. You don't need nobody else to do that. And of course, that's not the way
annulments to do it.
Not supposed to do it that way, because it doesn't make sense. It's a slap in the face of Catherine. She says, and that's why it's so different to think of an annulment as different than going to confession. So many people that have gone through a divorce and they want to get married into Catholic Church, they need to do an annulment. And they say, well, people can go to confession and confess an abortion or they robbed $1 million and they can get forgiveness. But somebody can't go to confession and say, I'm sorry, I got a divorce. You can and you should go to confession for saying that, but it doesn't mean you're divorced or that your marriage is annulled. Because why? Because shouldn't the other person have a say-so in it?
Mm-hmm.
To poo-poo the Catholic discipline of requiring an annulment that requires testimony on both sides, or at least the attempt of, or the offer of trying to get testimony on both sides, it's more reminiscent of the Islamic form of divorce. And maybe, do you know what the Islamic form of divorce is? Pretty simple. If a man wants a divorce from his wife, all he has to do is say three times, I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you. He's divorced then.
Wow.
It's kind of sad
yeah.
that they came up with that plan. Certainly it's a good plan if you're a guy who wants to get rid of your wife, but if you're a woman and you're married and you want to say, hey, what am I, chopped liver? And Catherine of Aragon was saying just that. Wait a minute. I didn't do anything wrong. You can't just divorce me because I haven't had a boy. Actually, she's had boys, but they died in labor mm-hmm. and all that. And so it really pushes it. So So there we go. Henry VIII does marry Anne Boleyn, and they have a little girl. Amazingly, right? Wait a minute, she should have had a boy, and then, but that little girl was Elizabeth, so a lot of people are saying, "Well, that's not. She can't be queen. She's." You could see how it would divide people and say some of the more Catholic people who were saying, oh, no, they were, Henry VIII and Catherine of Aragon were legitimately married, and so the legitimate daughter is Mary. So here the two little girls there. We got the two little girls, and then there's a little boy that comes around. Finally, there's a boy, little Edward. Edward comes around, and when Henry VIII finally dies, Edward becomes the king, but he's only like 7 years old. So obviously all the people around are, you know, the ones are going to, whoever controls little Eddie will control England.
Seems like a story of Game of Thrones.
It is, yes.
Wow.
Exactly.
Just wrinkled my brain, man.
Poor Nicky.
It's getting wrinkled, and it's about to get more wrinkled, I'm sorry to say. So, but Eddie then, but poor little Eddie, he only lives like two or three, maybe 4 years, and he dies. So now we have another problem. Okay, now who's going to be? So now the two girls are getting older.
Right. Couldn't one of them be just the queen?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And so Mary does become queen. But that doesn't make Anne Boleyn and her daughter Elizabeth very happy, right?
Oh, boy. Here it comes.
So there it comes, is right. Okay, let's take another quick break here, and we're gonna get to... somehow we're going to untangle this, and we're going to make these very important connections to our world today. Anyways, I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Thank you for spending your lunch hour with us. At Winds of Change, we talk to you about your faith and your life to bring you closer to Christ. And now we ask you to help us during the Winds of Change pledge drive. Please donate whatever you are able to help keep us on the air by going to ststans.org. Stans spelled STANS. That's ststans.org. And click on the radio tab to donate securely right now. We at Winds of Change thank you for your generosity.
The Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change.
On AM 750, WNDZ, and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Thank you for spending your lunch hour with us. At Winds of Change, we talk to you about your faith and your life to bring you closer to Christ. And now we ask you to help us during the Winds of Change pledge drive. Please donate whatever you are able to help keep us on the air by going to ststans.org. Stans spelled STANS. That's ststans.org. And click on the radio tab to donate securely right now. We at Winds of Change thank you for your generosity.
Hey, and thank you, Armand, for doing what you're doing to keep this radio world alive for Winds of Change. Let me add my voice. Please do support Winds of Change. Do go to ststanschurch.org and click on the radio tab to donate.
Anything you can donate.
Anything, yes. Whatever you're thinking of, then just add two more zeros and then we'll be all good. So, those who are blessed help bless us as well. And if you know you can't, do pray. But just a little bit will make you feel a lot better and feel a part of this great effort we're doing. So here we are trying to learn something about our world in a church by going back into history. And remember, this is all a preliminary to exercise the gift of, what is it, Tony? Holy forgetfulness. Holy forgetfulness, which is different than unholy forgetfulness. Mm-hmm. See, most people are walking around with unholy forgetfulness, and they think it's holy forgetfulness.
But it's not.
The unholy forgetfulness is just sort of a drunken stupor of ignorance. Like, where did I put my car? You know, my goodness, that's forgetfulness, but it's not.
The other side of the street. They told me it's on this side of the street.
Yeah, it's the way. My car, it made a big gash right in this tree right here. You see, where? Tree, there's no car there. That's the oldest tree in Pottersville. You know what I'm talking about there.
Yes, I do.
That's good old Jimmy Stewart. Anyways, okay, I'm trying to explain the story of the founding of the Church of England because it's fun. It's one of those stories with which you can practice holy forgetfulness. Mm-hmm. We need to know the truth because it destroyed a sense of Christian unity within Europe that multiplied throughout Europe and has never been the same since. And it affected the way the United States came about. Poor little Spain. We just had the Feast of St. Isidore the other day, one of the farmers from Spain. Mm-hmm. And reminds me that one of the distinctive differences between the United States of America and South America and Mexico and all is that people would quickly point to the fact that Catholicism was the religion du jour in the Hispanic world, and Protestantism was the religion du jour of the United States of America. And so they look at the United States of America, see a big, powerful, wealthy country, look at Mexico and much of the Hispanic world, see poverty and confusion and corruption, and will be quick then to put the blame on Catholicism. Say, well, wait a minute. See, it's Protestantism that made this society better. And so that's kind of proof of, but that would be an unfair assessment. Here's how I'm going to tell this part of the story of the Church of England, where William Cecil comes in. Or, did I paint the picture well enough with Queen Elizabeth yet? We left, where did I leave off? We had King Henry VIII dies.
Right.
The little boy, Edward, is king for a little while.
And then he dies.
He was an obnoxious kind of twerp. He really.
Hey, now.
He loved to insult his sister Mary, who is holding on to Catholicism. Because Mary was the daughter of Catherine, who really died for holding on. She was holding on to Catholicism by holding on to the sacredness of the marriage vows, mm-hmm. and the superiority of the Pope over kings. The little Edward, a little brother. Can you imagine if you're a 17-year-old girl who really should
be the king?
She could be queen.
Right.
But you have a 7-year-old brother who locks you up in your room and forbids you to go to Catholic Mass. Now, the 7-year-old king doesn't come up with this on his own. It's being told to him by his handlers, and amongst whom was this William Cecil. And William Cecil then masterminds this. So the way the story goes is that then when Eddie dies, Mary does become queen for a while.
Does she get rid of Cecil?
And Cecil changes his colors like a chameleon.
This sounds like I saw this in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, this is where they get this stuff.
It must be.
Reality is stranger than fiction. This is where they get. So he changes his color. As a matter of fact, Belloc even mentions the fact that, well, when he was in the court of Mary, that he carried around a big rosary. Mm-hmm. Hypocrite. Yeah. It was. Soon as the tides turns, he rips up the rosary and he's writing orders to execute priests who are anyone who's caught saying the Mass. So you could see what's going on there. Mm-hmm. But Mary then, by being a Catholic and saying, "Oh, we gotta save Catholicism in England," and a great majority of the people love the Mass, mm-hmm. and love their priests, and they weren't ready to join the dismantling of the Catholic Church in England. But those handlers, the people like William Cecil, saw an opportunity, and the opportunity was land grab, because the church did have a lot of property. So if you can be in control of the church, you can be in control of the property. You can close down an abbey, you can give that land to someone else. Very similar thing to what happened in Mexico, because the church did have a lot of land. And, you know, that's always been a little bit of a point in my mind. Maybe the church shouldn't have a lot of land, you know, maybe we should stop that. Then there wouldn't be land to steal, you know, people might think of it that way. But a thought hit me, again, slapped me upside the head. Our little Catholic school in our neighborhood, Everest Academy, recently just put in a beautiful new shrine, Blessed Mother Shrine. A little bit like the shrine that Notre Dame has in South Bend, you know, with a lot of people love to go to the Marian Shrine at Notre Dame in South Bend. You go to a football game there, and there's always people there before the game and after the game. I just heard recently that the mother of one of the football players, who was, I don't remember his name, but a pretty good football, Notre Dame football guy, when his mother came to the Notre Dame for the game days, she would go to the shrine and miss the game. She would just stay at the shrine for the whole afternoon. You know, and I took my hat for her because it's very beautiful. Anyways, here's the thought to connect that, the building of this little shrine, and the Protestant Reformation, kind of connecting, and Mexico for that matter. Mm-hmm. Now, you have to know, that if you can, I'll just try to paint the picture of the land that the school sits on. Nice school building. It took a long time to raise the money to get them, build it and everything. But on the side, there's a big vacant lot. It's kind of marshy. Not good for anything. You could develop it, but who was going to develop it? Okay, so they developed it with a shrine, not only with a beautiful statue and the grotto kind of thing, but beautiful trees and a walkway where there was just mud and dirt and stone. Oh my gosh!
And now we're out of time.
Now there's a beautiful. The church helped develop that property, and that property increases in value. Then someone comes, "I want that because it has a higher value." That's what was going on in England. So we're going to have to come back. God love you, my friends. I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time.